Welcome back to another episode of Repro Radio. Today, we're back in our happy place. We're talking about livestock and we are talking about pigs. So, Simon, I think it was your idea to do this episode really from a while ago. We've been talking about pigs for quite some time now. Why pigs? Why were you so interested to do an episode?
Well, I'm not sure whether you know this, but my first foray into the research world was with pigs.
Really?
I didn't know that. Project in my, yeah, it was even before my honours year. So I did a project on boar semen preservation and boar sperm sex sorting as well.
Oh, more you know.
Yeah, no, they're a fascinating species. Even if you take reproduction out of the equation, you know, incredibly intelligent animals. They also taste really good, but their reproduction is pretty fascinating as well. Really significant amounts of sperm that they're pushing out in that ejaculation, and reproductive tract of the sow is pretty fascinating as well. It's huge compared to all of the other livestock species that we deal with. So I think just having the ability for us to be able to compare back to some of the species that probably more of us are familiar with, sheep and cattle and goats, that sort of thing, and for the others, the mice, the humans, it's just an interesting insight into a completely different species, a completely different world of animal production too.
Well, if you don't know anything about pigs, you're about to learn a hell of a lot about them. We've got a great interview coming up with the COO of Minitube USA, so stick around for that.
This episode is sponsored by The Reproduction Company, experts in livestock semen assessment, training, and artificial breeding consultancy. If you've got samples that need testing, want to upskill your own assessment methods, or need advice on any aspect of livestock artificial breeding, then get in touch at thereproductionco.com.
All right, we're getting back into familiar territory today. We're talking to someone in the ag world. We've got with us John Quackenbush, who is the Chief Commercial Officer of Minitube USA. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
No, absolutely. It is our pleasure. So to kick us off, can you tell us a little bit about your story? Why pigs and how'd you get into repro?
I grew up in west central Minnesota, where the land is flat and black and the water runs north and not south, so a little bit different. But I grew up on a pretty diverse cattle, hog, and row crop operation. And so we had about 300 sows farrow to finish growing up, and I got to know pigs pretty well from the farrowing to the finishing and the marketing and all of that. I went to college kind of trying to figure out if I was going to go back to the farm or not and what I wanted to do in the future, and got the opportunity to go on an internship with Genetipork, which was a genetic company in Canada and the U.S. in the 90s, and they're no longer around, but had the opportunity to go work in their boar stud for a summer, and I thought that was going to be pretty cool because it sounded like a lazy man's opportunity on the repro side. Obviously, boar studs were just getting started, so nobody really knew what it was going to look like yet. But so I took that opportunity that summer and really enjoyed it. Got to know the boar stud world quite a bit. Spent a year in southern Minnesota on a sow farm that had an on-site boar stud, which was pretty popular at that time. And then took off to Nebraska and Kansas and took a job as a boar stud manager down there, and spent 13 years at that boar stud. So got a lot of opportunity there. We started as a 240 head stud. And by the time I left, there was 1,000 boars on that site. So had the opportunity to grow quite rapidly. I left there in 2014 and headed to Wisconsin. Decided that the production world was done for me, and I wanted to get into more of the consulting and AI supplies, and that's how I ended up at Minitube.
Amazing. Definitely sounds like you've got a wealth of experience. I think you might be the right man for the job today.
I'll try.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people listening usually are people who are in research themselves, and a lot of them have more of a sort of human repro background, or they might be working in mouse models. Some people might have come across pigs as sort of an experimental model, but a lot of us probably don't know that much about sort of the anatomy and the physiology of pig repro. So can you give us a bit of a beginner's 101?
So pigs in general are quite a bit different, just when it comes to the anatomy. When you look at the female side, the repro tract of the female pig is a small uterine body with a very long uterus into the oviduct and ovary. And so if you took that and stretched it out on a table, there's a pretty good chance it could be 4, 5 to 8 feet long from end to end. And so that shocks most people. On the male side, one of the major differences that people don't understand is the boar, when you collect semen, needs constant pressure, which is also very different than the rest of the males. On the estrus cycle of a sow, usually it's 21 days, but it's a wide range, anywhere from 17 to 25 days. Back to the male side, the sperm production side is also shocks most people. With a female repro tract that long, you obviously need a volume of liquid that can take those sperm cells from the cervix to the ovary. And so the ejaculate size of a boar can be anywhere from 100 milliliters all the way up to 900 milliliters, or a liter worth of volume, which if you're collecting a bull or a sheep, that's a completely different mindset when you see that size of an ejaculate.
Most students that hear that for the first time are just horrified. Yeah. That's what I get.
Yeah.
When I pass on that little fact, everyone's just like, what?
What do you do with that much semen?
And we talk in billions and not millions, know, with a B instead of an M. So that also shocks most people when we're dealing with not only the actual ejaculate, but the doses at the end that we send to the farm. So that's the extent of it. And those are the major differences when it comes to pigs, for sure.
Any big challenges that pigs, I suppose, face, or that farmers face from a reproduction perspective, like, you know, difficult to get pregnant, issues around seasonality, anything like that, or in general, fairly fertile creatures?
Yeah, they're fairly fertile. There's always problems. Probably the one big thing we continue to talk about and have forever, it seems like, is hygiene. Even, you know, whether it's outdoor production, natural mating, or even in these clean facilities that we have in a sow farm or a boar stud, we always concentrate on hygiene. There's some bacterias that we have to deal with all the time that are very hardy bacteria and can become resistant to anything we're trying. So hygiene in semen collection and hygiene on the sow farm during breeding is definitely a big topic. And then there's always summer infertility. I mean, that's been something we've talked about in sows for many, many years. And I don't know that it's any worse than it ever has been. In fact, sometimes it's better because we've changed the environment on some of these farms with filtration and air conditioning and climate and that type of thing. But we still have summer infertilities both on the boar side and the sow side.
So in past episodes, we've talked a fair bit about artificial breeding. It's kind of one of our comfort spaces, I think. I always like to touch on some of the history in the various species. When did pig production move from, you know, natural mating systems to artificial insemination?
There's a paper that boar semen collection and sow AI was first done in Russia back in 1907 or something. I mean, it's a long time ago. And then there's a lot of written stuff in the 1930s on semen collection and AI in Europe. But truthfully, when everything in Europe and the U.S. came about, Minitube put out our complete swine AI line in 1977. So that was Melrose catheters and collection equipment and that type of thing. That's when all that stuff came out. In the U.S., it was really the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. I remember back in the mid 80s, watching my dad use some frozen semen and trying to breed with a Melrose catheter with some frozen semen. I don't know that it worked all great, but I was still a young guy back then too, so I don't know all the numbers. But it was really in the early 90s when the AI from Europe came over to the U.S. and started being quickly adapted. So we saw this big transition from about 92, 93 through 2000 is when the U.S. really got impacted by AI and boar studs starting to be built, and watching on-farm semen collection transition to boar studs, that type of thing.
And John, what does the industry look like now in terms of the split between natural mating versus AI?
Yeah, there's no split. It's definitely AI. I would say probably in the United States, it's at least 95% and probably closer to 99% of all sows are bred artificially. Yep. And it's probably dang near that across the world. There's certain countries, I'm sure, that are doing a lot of natural mating in backyard production or whatever, but in the commercial world, it's probably 99% across the world for sure.
For the uninitiated, why is that the case? Like, why has there been such a takeover of AI compared to natural mating, particularly in pigs?
In my mind, it's two things. One, it's the use of boars on the sow farm. There was some, you know, safety and welfare concerns for staff. We lost a fair bit of the staff that was had knowledge or working knowledge of how to handle a boar in a natural mating system. But then it was genetic value, trying to get the number of high genetic value boars across more sows. So, you get into a situation nowadays where that genetic value can be spread across, you know, sometimes anywhere from 25 to 50 sows on one ejaculate. And that for sure changes what that looks like in a commercial mindset. And that's why you see so many boar studs, whether they're independent retail type systems where they're, you know, selling semen to an independent sow farm or a group of sow farms, or the integrated boar studs that are, you know, only taking care of a pot of sows. And we see that all over the world. I mean, that's not just a U.S. thing. That's a global thing for sure. So.
That was a great exam question that we just asked. I might for any
note
of my
that down for this year.
Yeah, I've told my students about the podcast. So for any of you listening, that may be in the exam in a couple of months' time. So this is probably a good kind of transition into a discussion on what modern pig reproduction looks like today. You know, you've touched on a few of these sorts of topics of, boar studs. I've heard you speak elsewhere about, semen delivery and some of the challenges with that. Could you talk us through a little bit of around how that modern pig repro works?
That's changed over even the last 10 or 12 years. When I first got into the boar studs, we would collect semen 3 to 4 to 5 days a week. We would package doses up to for a sow farm. We would put it in a cooler type system and ship it through whatever you could, UPS, FedEx, the U.S. Postal Service, whatever, however you could get semen to somebody the next day. And now today we are pretty much going away from that type of scenario. It is all hand delivered by the boar stud and their vehicles. Some of those vehicles will have integrated cooler systems in them to manage temperature. Others are using some modified igloo cooler type scenario. Boar studs are traveling more miles or kilometers today than they ever have before. I remember one week back in probably 2010 or 11 when we were kind of at our peak for semen delivery, and we put on 32,000 miles that week delivering semen across the Midwest to these sow farms. So,
oh my God.
Not everybody does that, but there's a lot of people that do. And these boar studs are being put in the best biosecure locations as possible. You don't see boar studs in a pod of sows anymore where it's a close proximity, maybe 60 to 100 kilometers away from the boar stud. I mean, you're having to drive quite a few miles to get somewhere to deliver semen. So that's changed a lot. There are very few packages delivered by UPS or FedEx or the mail system. Nobody uses the mail system today, but UPS or FedEx. I won't even deliver a letter in the mail anymore.
I was going to say, that's my experience with the U.S. Postal Service. Yeah.
But that's changed quite a bit. And so, so what also has changed is because of those transport services, you're delivering from farm to farm to farm to farm. And so with biosecurity, we have to make sure that we're not dropping semen at the doorstep of the sow farm. And so that's changed quite a bit too, where there's offsite semen drops or deliveries in town at a farm store or at, you know, a little storage shed at the end of the driveway that's got a semen cooler in it or something like that. And so everybody's biosecure. It's just as important for the sow farm as it is for the boar stud. Obviously, if a boar stud breaks, that's a really, really, really bad thing. If a sow farm breaks, it's just a really bad thing.
So let's talk more about these boar studs. So what kind of scale are we talking? I mean, I know there's variation across the industry, but there's some pretty decent sized operations, right?
Probably the early 2000s, most boar studs would be in that 100 to 250 boars per site. And there was so many boar studs being built at that or happening at that time, not being built, that we would use whatever building was available. Might be an old finisher, might be a nursery, might be a sow farm, a gestation barn that got transitioned into that. And as we're going through this process now, there's barns being built for boar studs. And so they're ventilated the way we need a boar stud ventilated. The slats are maybe a little bit heavier than a normal finisher or gestation barn is. We're putting specialized collection pits or collection facilities in to make sure that we can be efficient in semen collection. Labs are being built to this size. And so as you're doing that, there's a number of boars under one roof that makes sense. And those barns are kind of being sized to that 350 to 400 boars under a roof. I've seen as many as 700 boars under one roof, which makes me nervous, but there's 700 boars under a roof. But you may have multiple barns on a site also. So the biggest site that I know of has 800 boars on one site, and that's two 400 boar barns with a lab connected to it.
Would all 800 of those be collected in a single day?
Yeah, they'll be staged. I mean, you're trying to, so most of the industry today has gone to a 3-day or it's 2 to 3 days. There are a few doing 4-day production. So most of the production in the U.S. has gone to a Monday, Wednesday, Friday collection type production schedule. There's some Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday production, that type of thing, which is completely different than when I started, when we were collecting Sunday through Thursday or Sunday through Friday. So so most of those boars, those 800, would get collected once a week, but they're spread out through those days. There are boar studs collecting, you know, 300 or 400 boars a day for sure.
Well,
and yeah. And famously in our world anyway, boars were traditionally collected with, you know, this gloved hand method, you know, manually. But in recent years, you know, we've talked about efficiency. There's been some innovations, some technical innovations that have sped up, well, maybe not sped up the process necessarily, but they've automated or reduced the amount of labor input required. Can you please tell us about automated semen collection, which I think is one of the most fascinating things that I reckon I've ever seen within an agriculture setting.
Yeah, so we call it semi-automated semen collection.
It's not a full robot.
It's not a robot. As much as people would like a robot, it's definitely not a robot. But so when we as an industry, when we started collecting semen, the idea was to try and make it as natural as possible. So we had these great big wide pens with a dummy in the middle. We wanted the boar to feel like he was doing something natural mating wise. So playing with the dummy, kind of maneuvering around until he got his libido to the point where he was ready to mount. And so the kind of the first semi-automatic semen collection system came out, and we started using that in these big pens. And basically it was a artificial cervix that was made out of foam, where you would grasp the penis and extend the penis out and then stick this foam into a clamp. And it sounds harsh, but it didn't hurt anything. You stuck it in this clamp and left that or got enough pressure there that the boar would start to ejaculate. As we transitioned and realized that the boars were still wasting a bunch of time, we needed to try and make that boar do his job. And so we've gone from this wide pen to this narrow crate style pen. So it's maybe, I don't know, a meter wide at the most, or a meter I'll call it a meter and a few inches for everybody's benefit. But a meter wide pen where that boar, and then also wrapped in plastic. We also thought that the boar, when he was kind of on deck or waiting, he needed to see the boar in front of him do his job. That was that's what everybody was telling us to do anyway, so we didn't know any better. So we let the boar watch the other boar, and it didn't help anything. It didn't speed it up. So now we wrap those pens in plastic or in stainless steel, and that boar can't see anything. He can't see people. He can't see boars in front or behind him. He's just allowed to go in. He sees that dummy. That's all he can do. That's his job for the day. And that's sped up time to mount. And that's where we save the most time, is that time to mount. And it went from 15 minutes of time to mount down to 2 or 3 minutes, because now all of a sudden those smells were there. He knew what his job was and he went. So that's where we saved the amount of time. The actual process of the collection doesn't change. It still takes 7 to 10 minutes or whatever it's going to take for that boar to ejaculate. So
obviously a huge difference. If anybody's got any experience collecting sheep or cattle, even if you're electro-ejaculating cattle, it's over in a matter of, you know, less than 5 minutes typically. So I think boars are really in their own field when it comes to ejaculation. They're quite slow, and so it makes sense that you do everything you can to try and speed up that process, make it as efficient as possible.
Yeah, for sure. And there's multiple parts of the boar ejaculate too. I mean, that's the other part that most people don't understand, is there's, you know, when they're in the natural mating system, there's a gel fraction that comes to close off the cervix, and then there's the semen part, the sperm rich part, and then another gel fraction, and then the seminal plasma, and then another gel fraction, and that goes on and on and on for quite a while. So So it's much different from that standpoint. The other part of semi-automated collection, sorry, that other part of that is that it allowed a collector the ability to not just care for one boar at a time. When you hook them up to that semi-automated system, you can now go to the next boar. And so I've got people today that are collecting two or three or up to six boars at a time that are, you know, they're just connecting those boars and letting them mount, you know, let the next one mount and connect them. And so that's changed the people standpoint of this as well, to where you can reduce the number of collectors but continue with the same amount of collection pens.
So when this ejaculate is being collected, it's being collected into some sort of fairly significantly sized vessel, given the volume. But there's a filter, a bag, or can you tell us about that, and then how that goes then through to the semen lab?
There's a bag that Minitube developed called the Universal Semen Bag. We developed it many years ago, and it's got an attached filter inside, or filter pouch inside the bag. And that filter pouch is about 8 inches wide by about 4 inches deep. So it's got quite a bit of volume to it. In the hand collection scenario, you have that entire volume. In the semi-automated collection system, that bag goes onto that cup. And then there's a collar that attaches the cervix, the artificial cervix, to the bag. And so you have a complete system that is not open to the air or fecal matter or liquids or anything draining into that. And so that filter catches the gel fraction and allows just the liquid part to go into that bag, into that cup. And so you don't have to worry about, you know, any outside debris or anything entering that filter. After the ejaculate's completed, you can rip that filter off and discard all that gel fraction and any debris that does get caught into that filter, and then take that bag, mark it or identify it to that animal. And then depending on where the lab is at, there's multiple things that are happening. Some people have a lab right next door, so they're handing it through a pass-through window. Others have a pneumatic system where they're putting that ejaculate into a pill and shipping it off to the lab, kind of like your money at the bank teller type scenario. And then we have some systems that are driving ejaculates to a lab. Maybe they're offsite.
Yeah, I feel like I want to petition the university to build one of the pneumatic delivery systems, because it would be amazing.
It is one of my favorite things.
They're pretty slick when they work, that's for sure.
And I think that the boar semen production industry has been pretty forward-thinking when it comes to sort of automated assessments and some of the processing as well. I guess given the scale of production, can you give us an idea of how many units some of these big production semen production centers are making on a given day, and you know how I guess semen assessment and then dilution and all that sort of stuff happens?
There's probably 70% of the boar studs that have some sort of CASA system in their stud. There's a few systems that still continue to use a microscope to look at motility and do a morphology hand count or that type of thing, and use some sort of a photometer for concentration. But a majority of them have gone to a CASA system. As boar studs are processing semen, there are scenarios in the world where there's some standardization. Europe and certain countries in Europe have a standard that you're supposed to try and meet with a range around it. It's not the case in North America. There is no standard for semen production. I think that would be an interesting conversation with a lot of genetic companies sitting in a room trying to figure out what that number looks like. But there is no standard today. And so we see a lot of variation in the concentration and the volume of a final dose of semen to go to a sow farm. And so, and that also depends on if you're still using a traditional AI scenario or post-cervical, which we haven't even mentioned yet. But so we see today in the U.S. boar studs creating doses based on what their customers are asking for. If you're in a retail stud, you may have a variety of products that you're building for those sow farms. If you're in an integrated stud, you probably have a standard of some sort inside that system. But we're seeing volumes today in the U.S. anywhere from 32 milliliters for a post-cervical dose all the way up to 80 milliliters for a traditional dose and everything in between. Most of the traditional doses are 65 to 80 milliliters, somewhere around there. And you're seeing a lot of reduction in sperm counts, but anywhere from 2 billion all the way up to 3.5 billion per dose of semen, somewhere in there. As far as production, depending on if you're just a traditional stud and you're just building traditional doses, typically a 300 head boar stud, which would be our average size in the U.S., they're going to produce anywhere from 4,500 to 6,000 doses in a week. The bigger studs are obviously going to do more than that. If you throw post-cervical doses in there, so you're using less volume, less sperm cells, you know, then you can exponentially grow that depending on what your percentage of post-cervical versus traditionals are. I know of one boar stud that will get somewhere around 20,000 doses a week through their system. And that's on a two-site location relatively close to each other. So the amount of semen production and the number of doses they can spread around is quite large. And then obviously biosecurity is a huge part of their system, because you lose that boar stud and that's a major problem.
It's a lot of androhip.
I can't even picture what like 20,000 bags or bottles of semen looks like. Like that's like, it must be a warehouse cool room full of semen doses.
Yeah. It's some of those cool rooms look quite interesting. That's for sure.
Yeah. So we touched on it a little bit then, as you were talking about, you know, traditional versus post-cervical AI. Do you want to just explain what the difference is between those two methods?
Traditional or conventional AI would just be a standard catheter. You know, we used to use Spirettes or Melrose catheters, where you would just enter the cervix with that catheter. Most people have gone to more of a foam tip type style catheter. It still enters the initial part of the cervix, but the sow is going to lock onto that catheter with her cervical contractions and then pull the semen into the uterine body with her contractions from that dose of semen. Post-cervical is going to still use that same style catheter, that foam tip catheter that'll hit the base of the cervix, but now you have an inner catheter or inner cannula that you can thread through the cervix and into the uterine body. So the reason for the reduction of volume, and this is controversial, and so I'll try to be careful in my statements, but the amount of volume that's necessary in that post-cervical dose really still comes down to how much volume is needed to get to the ovary and the follicle and to make sure that sperm are still there when it needs to be there. So, in my opinion, 32 milliliters is not enough, but that's my opinion. The uterine body itself on a sow that's just been weaned can hold about 60 milliliters. So 60 seems to be the right number or something around that, maybe just a little less than that. But that 45 to 60 milliliters seems to be the number that a lot of people like. So that cervix or that inner cannula goes through the cervix, and then you can deliver that semen quite rapidly. And that's a lot of the reason that people have gone to post-cervical. Initially, it was for genetic value, to be able to continue to spread the best boars across more sows. It's now become more about efficiency. And so you can breed that sow faster. You can just push the semen into the uterine body, and then it and then let the sow do the job from there.
I love that every species has its like little point of contention. Like insane.
And they're very niche.
Yeah, this yeah. It's so yeah. niche. So it sounds like in pigs, insemination volume is something that people argue about at conferences sometimes.
For sure. And it's probably the area that needs the most research. I mean, we have people have done their own and they've come up with some idea of what works for them. And it does work in a lot of systems. You take Europe, for example, they do very little post-cervical anymore. There's most of it's done in Spain, if anywhere. But they've gone back to a traditional AI dose of 80 milliliters with a lot less sperm cells. So obviously they know something and they've done that work. And so it works. But what really works or how much do we really need for a post-cervical dose is, I think, yet to be determined from a publication standpoint. There still will be controversy around it at some point in time. So there's a wide range there for sure.
How many sows overall are being bred in the US? What's the kind of general scale of the industry?
The sow numbers today are right around 6.15 million sows. That was the USDA report just came out on March 1st and it fluctuates quarter to quarter, but it's 6.2, 6.1 million sows today in the breeding herd.
So, John, I've got a question very much for my own interests, something that's close to my heart. So I work a lot in semen freezing and I've never worked with pigs, but I'm just aware that as a species, they're one of these oddities where frozen semen really just doesn't seem to be in commercial use. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Anything that looks like there's movement in that space, is it going to be used anytime soon?
I think it's being used, but mostly it's being used exporting genetics to countries that we can't get fresh semen to. There's a lot of export from the U.S. and Canada to China and Vietnam and a little bit to the Philippines or some South American countries, that type of thing. There's obviously conversation today on frozen semen because of African swine fever. And I know nobody likes to talk about that, but we're for sure having to try and get ready for it for when it comes, not if. So so frozen semen is an opportunity to just keep sow farms running. There's not a lot of frozen semen commercially produced. A majority of it, I would say, is in Canada. There's a few systems in the U.S. that are producing frozen semen, but from an old standard. So they're using a 5 milliliter macro tube instead of a half cc straw, so to speak. So, and some of that's changing. I think there's still the belief that frozen semen is inferior. And we know today that that's not the case. The extenders have gotten better. The process has gotten better. The ejaculates are better. Everything we're doing is better. So we can get similar fertility out of frozen semen that we can with fresh. However, it's water quality. We still have to take a large volume to breed a sow. So if you're using half cc or half milliliter straws, it's going to take 6 to 10 straws to produce a dose of semen. And you still have to thaw those out and extend them out to get the volume needed to breed a sow. And so depending on where you're going, we still need water quality to mix with that extension extender or that thaw extender to create that volume. And that's where we find the most difficulties and the worst scenarios come into play is poor water quality in some of these places. So
yeah, that's so interesting because it's not the issue that I thought it would be, but it totally makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a real blast from the past talking about semen freezing. So my honors project was in boar semen freezing and we were using these little flat packs. Like we were testing flat packs for compared to the like 0.5 mil and I think those 5 mil maxi tubes and everything. It was a lot of it was a lot of processing hassle. And for the postdocs and PhD students that were working on that, when they took it to AI, I remember just how much of a hassle it was when it's like, okay, we got quite a bit of volume that we've got to put into these sows. Look at all this stuff that we've got to thaw. What a pain.
Yeah. Well, and I think the macro tube scenario, our freezing technology has gotten so much better in quarter CC and half CC straws with the bovine and other species world, that freezing macro tubes is still hard to do. I mean, you're talking about a 5 milliliter volume that you're trying to freeze end to end, and what happens to the stuff in the middle when it doesn't freeze properly, and were those part of our bad results that we didn't know? We're seeing a few people go back to pellets even, and freezing pellets instead of in straws, which we are all smiling at the moment, but that's just what's happening. So.
I'd say probably the majority of the Australian sheep industry still freezes semen in pellets.
Pellets are the best. It's my favorite way to freeze.
That's one of the – we're talking about species controversies. That's one of the ones that exists within the Australian sheep industry at the moment, that there'll be people having a drink of an evening and arguing about straws versus pellets. So it's all very, very niche. We can't have a discussion about pig reproductive technologies without at least mentioning sex semen. Where is that technology at the moment with pigs?
There is boar semen being sexed. It is happening. It's happening with one company and maybe a second one. I don't know for sure, but it is definitely happening with one company. And to say that it'll be a commercial scenario someday in the pig semen world is a little bit unbelievable, just with the length of time that I can imagine it's taking in some of the conversations I've had. So I can see it in more of a nucleus type situation at that highest level of sow farm where they need to take those genetics and make something out of that. And whether that's on the gilt side or the boar side, you know, get the reduction in sperm cells and be, you know, female or male related.
I mean, you gave us an amazing overview of your career to date, and you've definitely highlighted how much the industry's changed over the time that you've been involved in it. So it'd be really lovely to hear sort of where you think it's going. How do you think things are going to change in the next 10 or 20 or 50 years?
From a futuristic standpoint, I can see us using less and less sperm cells to get our job done and to get to the point where those boars are spread across, I don't know, X number of sows. I mean, it's going to be an interesting number at some point in time. There's still more work to be done as to figure out how many sperm cells that really is. And the biggest issue in pig production worldwide today, which is hard to figure out where the future is going to go, is the research on reproduction is there's not a lot of it. I mean, from an academic standpoint, there's some stuff going on. From a commercial scenario, there's just not enough boars to do some big research project on to figure out, you know, the difference between compensable and non-compensable traits and what we should be doing there when cytoplasmic droplets are the, you know, how many cytoplasmic droplets we can actually have in any ejaculate, all that type of stuff. There's just not enough, which is hard to say because there's almost 28,000 boars in the United States. But there's no sow farms that are willing to let us just take what would be considered subpar semen today and put it into their sow farm and say, well, let's try this and see what happens. That's not the case. So we need all of the meat that we're producing worldwide in pig production today to support the population that's there. I think we're going to see more changes to what sow farms look like. Um, I I believe someday we'll be going back to some of the single site production, where that might be some barns that are multiple stories instead of just single story. I don't know that we'll go as far as China where there's 18 floors in a barn, but you're going to start seeing some of those things happen. Yeah. If you haven't seen pictures of some of those sow farms in China, you should Google that.
Googling and it right now.
But I can see some of that happening to where we're back to some single site style production. And then trying to figure out how many pigs can a sow really have from a born standpoint and raising them. I never thought I would see a day where there was 16 teats on a sow, and we're seeing that all the time now. Or at least 14 consistently, and some have 16. And how long does a sow need to be to raise more pigs? And that's just something that I tend to think we're maxed out on, but somebody will try it. So when you have a litter today that's 20 or 22, she can't raise all of those. And so that takes more work for us to split suckle and that type of thing to try and help her raise those pigs or cross foster those. So,
and John, you've sort of touched on this a little bit, but are there any areas that you would particularly like to see more research in?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest one is the morphology traits on sperm cells and how do we quantify what is, what are the limitations or what are the acceptable standards from that standpoint? Because there is no standard, I guess. I mean, there's a lot of papers out there on what we can and can't use, but trying to find those marks, especially when it comes to cytoplasmic droplets and tails, because those are the traits that a boar stud can easily look at throughout the production day. The rest of them, it takes time, and nobody has that time today to at a line speed scenario to get those out. So that would be one of the major ones, I think. And then, from the south side, we continue to work on the nutrition aspects of reproduction and how to help sows and boars out to limit some of those infertility sessions that do happen throughout the year. And then that comes down to, again, what we can use from country regulations and that type of thing to help those things out. So we'll continue to do reproduction research, make sure that the extenders are where they need to be, make sure that we can get the best sperm cells and a dose of semen as possible. So,
John, that was an absolutely fascinating powerhouse tour through the world of pig reproduction and boar semen production. We can't thank you enough for the time that you've dedicated to our podcast and for supporting us in this way. Thanks so much for sharing your expertise with us all.
Yeah, not a problem. I will hook up with you when I get to Australia again. So don't know when that'll be, but I'll get there.
Yeah, it'll be great to see you again and share a beer. Looking forward to it. Well, Taylor, that was absolutely everything that I was hoping for and more. Pigs truly are pretty fascinating when it comes to their reproductive physiology. And I've got to say, the sheer scale of semen production and artificial insemination in the US pig production industry, or the worldwide pig production industry, is spectacular.
Yeah, it's just nuts. Like, I knew that the numbers from the US would be a lot crazier than they are in Australia, but it's just hard to wrap your head around some of the numbers that John was throwing out there, like hundreds of boars being in a single semen collection center. You know, think about how many ejaculates that is every day, every week being processed. And then not only that side of things, but all of the transport and logistics that goes into it, like, it's a big business.
Absolutely. And I think that something we forget a little bit in Australia here is that there are a lot of pigs out there in the world. It is a really, really important protein source, particularly in Europe and through Asia. It's a huge, huge global business. Something else that was interesting, and you're touching there on just the efficiency of the semen production system and transport and AI and all that works so smoothly, is that there just isn't really a need at the moment to use frozen semen that much, except when it comes to maybe a little bit of export genetics in certain situations.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, a lot of my research focus is on semen freezing, and for so many species, the real long-term goal is to have, you know, the highest possible pregnancy rates using frozen semen, because especially in Australia, that's the big challenge, is that we've got this logistical issue of not being able to hold semen for long enough if we've got to transport it across the country. So it's just so interesting, I guess, just looking at it in a really different context and seeing what is possible as well. If an industry is well organized enough, they can sort of make anything work.
Totally. Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed our foray into the pig reproduction space. We're very grateful to our sponsors for this episode. We're grateful to John for agreeing to join us all the way from the US. And we are, as always, thankful to you, our listeners, for joining in and listening to what we had to say here on Repro Radio. So with that, thanks very much, and we look forward to joining you next month for another great episode.
Thanks for joining us. For more information about our guests today or Repro news, check out the show notes for this episode on our website. If you've got a question for our next guest, send us an email or find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Repro Radio is hosted and produced by me, Taylor Pinney, and executive produced by Simon DeGraff. Repro News by Naomi Bernicich, ACR Spotlight Reporting by Kelsey Poole, production assistance by Jess Rickard, Maddie Vanderhoek, and Sophie Waugh, and audio design by Dylan Gerrilly.
So, Simon, why pigs? Well, I love bacon, and that's all there is to know.